Final hour on this Tuesday. Welcome back. So happy to have you guys in for one more hour. Been a fun show, a fast show. If you miss any of it, check out the podcast, The Buck Rising Show, in your favorite podcast apps. Follow, rate, review. We love to see it. Talking a lot about the Titans today. We had our TN High School Heroes segment to spend a little time on some local high school football. And we're going to get to the Vols momentarily. Mike Wilson of Knoxville News Sentinel will join us coming up next. But there has been the best part about this radio show, this one in particular. All the Zone radio shows are great. J. Martin Ramon, although I heard they had a bit of a morning. They had a bit of a morning today with Rashawn Evans. I don't know how that experience was for them. Actually, I do know how that experience was for them. It seemed unpleasant. But all the Zone shows are great. Blaine and Mickey After Me and Lucas. And then, of course, 3HL in the afternoons. And I believe they have Roger Saffold on today for their football feast deal that they do out at Buffalo Wild Wings. But what makes this show in particular, among many things, I think we're pretty good, is that the callers fight with each other. And I want more violence. It's that meme. It's that meme with the cat just screeching, more violence. That's what I want on the airwaves. And I love that our callers fight with one another. I love that they fight with one in particular. That one in particular is always Darrington. So we go to someone who is known for bringing the smoke, RJ in Phoenix, who joins us now on 104.5 The Zone. RJ, what's up?
What's going on, man? He is henceforth and forevermore to be known as Scarrington.
What a coward. Okay. He waited until the dust had settled.
Scarrington is a fake and a fraud, and I demand satisfaction. Okay? If he was in my face right now, I would take off my glove and slap him with it and demand a duel. Okay? He is a liar. He is a liar. He did not go to the game, change his flight, and then go to California. He's a liar. He set up all day yesterday and came up with that. He said himself he heard us talking all the mess. So if you heard us talking mess, then you chose not to call in and face it.
Right.
I live in Phoenix. I called a Phoenix radio station, and I manned up after talking all my smack. He used to be entertaining. He used to be funny. Now he is a clown. He has lost all credibility. He has no reason to call the radio station ever again. We don't need him anymore. He lost his chance. He had a chance to be a man, the man, and he shriveled up. And so that's all I got to say. Leave me on hold so I can listen to y'all laugh at Scarrington's scary self. He's a buster.
Why don't you put him on hold? And right after you do it, Lucas, go ahead and rack him. Woo! RJ's not lying.
Yeah, that visual of him just taking off a glove.
It's so good.
Smack him. Not punch or anything.
The disc, not an open hand. No, just with a thin white glove. Just smacking him across the head. It's so good. And Spencer, you know, I think we're starting to poke holes in Darrington's story. Because if Darrington was saying that he was going to Los Angeles for things that are legal that are not legal elsewhere, well, then why wouldn't you just stay in Washington where it's all legal? In fact, they, like, openly encourage it. It smells loud in the streets of Seattle and across the great North Pacific Northwest. This was a choke by Darrington. I've hyped him up. We've fed the beast. We have created him. Listen, I love that we have characters. RJ and Phoenix is a character. Darrington is a character. Scott and Beth Page is a character. I love that we have regular callers. I want it to be Feinbaum, except not boring. So if we can start fights amongst the callers, I'm here for it. But it seems they all only want to fight with one of them. And the one that they want to fight with ran from the fight yesterday. It's a tough scene. 615-737-1045 is the number if you'd like to weigh in about the Tennessee Titans. But let's, instead of Titans, let's pivot to Vols here, because we haven't talked about Tennessee Tech. And what do you say? What do you say about Tennessee Tech? And my question would be for you, as the audience, what did you learn from the Tennessee Tech game? Now, Joe Milton not able to go. Hendon Hooker gets the start. The result is what it is. It's 56-0. And I just frankly, I feel bad for Tennessee Tech. And I know that the athletic department gets a payday out of it, but that didn't make it hurt any less for those student athletes that went out there and got, you know, bullied. But for the purposes of Florida Week, because now it's Florida Week, now it's real, now it's SEC play, now you see whether the mistakes that you've tried to correct in non-conference play against Bowling Green and then Pitt and now Tennessee Tech, you've had your ramp up. Now it is time to show whether you've corrected those mistakes or at least tried to cover them enough to make you competitive in an incredibly hostile environment. What did you learn about the Vols against Tennessee Tech in a 56-0 win? 615-737-1045. For me, you know, I'd like to start with Josh Heupel, can we? Because Lucas found this audio from the head coach after the Tennessee Tech game, and he's talking about the execution on the deep balls, because it's not just Joe Milton who's overthrowing receivers. Hendon Hooker was not accurate deep. Now, I like him better as a runner. I think that you see, and I saw Charlie Burris, our buddy over there at the Big Orange podcast, talking about, you know, it's Dobbs-esque the way that he carries the football as opposed to Milton, who you've heard, I know Lucas and a lot of other people's analysis about, Milton runs like a quarterback and Hooker runs like a wide receiver or a running back. Like, he understands how to carry the ball. But the execution on the deep passes is still not there, regardless of who the quarterback is. And I'll talk about the third quarterback.
And with that said, ball security is an issue, though, with him running. He knows that as far as vision and just fluidity, but ball security has been an issue.
It's worth noting. But it's not the only issue that they have. And against Florida, they need explosive plays. And they can't hit explosive plays right now to save their life. This was the head coach on whether it comforts him or not that at least the deep plays are there.
You guys could see that too?
Yeah. Is it a good feeling to know that you're at least drawing up the right plays and executing part of it?
Not really. At the end of the day, it's about 11 guys playing together as one, and we're at a point where we should be able to execute those things at a higher level than we did. In the first three games, week one, there's an anomaly, a little bit different structure than what we were going to see week one in our offense. Week two just didn't connect the way that we're capable of. We got to grow out of that. And you guys have heard me say it, our players have too. We're in a race against ourselves to get them as good as we can, as fast as we can. We got to get better quickly. Big opponent, as far as the test next week down in Gainesville.
Florida Hate Week. Now, Josh Heupel and Nick Saban both sounded like they were doing their press conferences in a closet.
Yes.
From an audio quality wise, but you see what he was asked, or you heard, I think, mostly what he was asked, which was, "Hey, does it make you feel any better that the plays are there? It's just you're not hitting them." And he said, "Yeah, not really." I mean, which is what he's supposed to say, right? You're not supposed to be satisfied with, "Hey, my offense works. It's just the quarterback can't get the football to the receiver." No, it's about the execution, because they're missing opportunities. It's costing them. You know, 56-0 looks great on paper. And then you look at the opponent and you realize that the defensive tackles for Tennessee Tech weigh as much as I do right now. And I'm not exactly light on my feet right now, but I'm not a college football player going into an SEC environment and just getting, pushed around. I think for Tennessee, here's what I took away, okay? That there's not a big difference in the missed opportunities between Hooker and Milton. If you're looking at the plays that Milton is giving up egregiously, right? Now, you saw more from Velus Jones this week. He had a great game, not just in the passing game, but he was great on special teams as well. You got more out of just the offensive product as a whole. But again, the quality of the opponent is going to change drastically this week. You can hate Florida all you want. You can want them to lose as many ways as humanly possible. There's no greater vindication for Vols fans, even if it wasn't against your team, that Florida missed the college football playoff last year because a player threw a shoe down the field. But this is not, that's not the kind of missed opportunities and mental mistakes that we're talking about. We're talking about inaccuracy from the quarterback, the most important position. And now that I've seen a full sample size, at least a one-game sample size of Hendon Hooker, I'm comfortable saying that I think they could go either way. Like, I don't know how Vols fans feel about this for Florida, but I'd say that, you know, we now kind of understand what Josh Heupel and Alex Golish are looking at in practice, to where they're saying, all right, it's not a big enough difference for us to make a switch long term. And what I saw more than anything, what I learned from Tennessee Tech, is that Harrison Bailey is quarterback three, and it's not really close. It's a five-star recruit that doesn't play like a five-star recruit. This is a quarterback on the roster who, you know, in some Vols fans' opinions, as our buddy Adam Sparks told us last week, he's either Peyton Manning or just the worst quarterback ever. And then he gets in garbage time, and he really looks unimpressive. I mean, really unimpressive as far as, again, the level of competition that he's facing. He's not isolating and eliminating when he's going through his progressions. He's not mobile enough to take advantage of the rushing lanes that this kind of offense does create. Now, I know he did have some plays that he made with his feet, but that's like that one play that people kept sending Lucas of Harrison Bailey making one scramble and running like a baby giraffe.
Yeah, he rushed for a touchdown.
That's what I'm saying.
But I think you learned why this staff went with Milton in the first place.
615-737-1045 is how you get involved. We'll take your calls. Coming up next, Mike Wilson of the Knoxville News Sentinel will join us, and we'll see what they need to do, in his opinion, to be prepared for the Gators in Gainesville. That's on the other side. I'm Buck Rising. This is 104.5 The Zone. Welcome back. 104.5 The Zone. Buck Rising here with you. Now, it's been a while since we've seen or spoken with our buddy Mike Wilson of the Knoxville News Sentinel. At By Mike Wilson is where you can find him on the socials. Subscribe to the Knoxville News Sentinel for all of their great coverage, Vols or otherwise. They've got a very, very strong department of sports writers. Now, he came on the Zoom and he said he missed my face. You say that to all the girls?
No, just you, Buck.
Lucas, is he lying to me?
No comment.
Oh, so we're preserving Mike Wilson's moves, his pickup lines. I'm not quite yet seduced. We'll see how it goes by the end of the interview. 56-0, Tennessee Tech. They've got defensive ends. They've got defensive tackles that weigh as much as you and Lucas do, and they're out there playing an SEC team. What did you legitimately learn about the Vols in a game that the competition, the difference between the competitors was so stark?
I learned that Tennessee Tech's on-field abilities are about as good as my pickup lines.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that would be the first takeaway.
God.
You don't really learn a lot in games like that. I mean, the size differential, the speed differential, those things are so obvious. But that said, seeing Hendon Hooker get extended action, I thought was really important, even against a lesser opponent. I think, I don't know that he cemented himself as Tennessee's quarterback. I didn't think he played well enough to do that, but I do think he showed enough that he has to continue getting playing time, whether that's splitting duty with Joe Milton if he's healthy enough, or being the starter. I think it was clear that he does some things that give Tennessee a better chance to win than they've had with Joe Milton.
You know, and that's interesting, because Lucas and I were talking about this in our pre-show meeting. Lucas feels that they'll probably go back to Milton in Florida in some kind of capacity. And you know, the difference to me, Mike, I understand what you're saying. The operation looked cleaner. There were fewer, you know, pulling out of your hair plays, as somebody who's just an observer of this particular program. But I mean, the overthrows are still a problem with Hooker, and I don't understand why it is that they can't get a quarterback to accurately hit these deep plays when they have dudes running wide open down the field consistently.
Yeah, I think the answer would be to deflate the footballs.
I want some underthrows, Mike.
Yeah, maybe then they won't travel as far. if that's how physics works, I'm not sure. I didn't do so well in that in high school. I wouldn't be surprised to see Tennessee give Milton more looks. Even after that opener, though, I thought what's so interesting with Milton is he's got so much potential, and you can see where he can just be a star. But I feel like when you throw him out in the field, you're getting anywhere from an A performance to a D performance. I mean, you just don't really know what you're going to get in there. Whereas with Hooker, it seems like you're in that B plus to C plus range consistently. And so I guess it, really what it's going to come down to from my vantage point is do you kind of want the consistency at that B level, or are you going to take a shot on the upside of Joe Milton, which obviously Tennessee did with starting the season the way they did with Milton. But Hooker's got more experience. He's got a little bit more playmaking ability with his legs, seems to throw a more catchable ball, does still miss some overthrows downfield. But seems like he might give Tennessee that better shot. But I won't be surprised if we see a quarterback platoon at some point whenever Milton's healthy before Tennessee figures this out.
Mike Wilson of the Knoxville News Sentinel is here with us on 104.5 The Zone. We're talking about Tennessee heading into Florida week. So to that end, you know, all things go back to the head coach when it comes to the Vols. In most circumstances, and with the offense, we see the concept, we see proof of concept, we see a lack of execution to a degree, even though the operation, again, seemed less erratic with Hendon Hooker at quarterback. But the bill of goods sold to Vols fans, Mike, wasn't just that the offense is going to keep you in these games, if not outright win you these games early on when the talent disparity is there in interconference play. The development of quarterback, though, is something that he is continually cited as being able to, or at least above average, at doing. Is it too early to say that Josh Heupel just working with what he's got, and this is the best that these guys are going to look? Because I mean, Harrison Bailey, when he got out there in garbage time, was hot trash too. Like, I did not, I mean, I know that nobody looked bad against Tennessee Tech, but I'm clearly looking at a quarterback who's super talented, who comes in as a five-star recruit and doesn't play like one at all. And these guys are, there's just too much inconsistency from that position for me to be like, you know, I think Heupel's doing a good job on the development of these guys outside of just running his offense.
Yeah, I think when you look at the quarterback position as a whole for Tennessee, and specifically with Harrison Bailey, which I know there's an obsession with Harrison Bailey as Tennessee's quarterback. I get it. You know, top recruit, you're always obsessed with the top quarterback recruit, always obsessed with the backup quarterback, in this case, the third string quarterback. But there's a reality, and someone pointed this out to me after the game the other day. Tennessee's old staff wasn't sold on Harrison Bailey to the point that they brought in Hendon Hooker in the offseason. This new staff wasn't sold on Hendon Hooker or Harrison Bailey enough that they brought in Joe Milton after spring football. That tells you kind of everything you need to know about where that quarterback room is. Tennessee hasn't felt great about that position, clearly. And that's why even after spring football, when you go through it at that point with Brian Maurer, Harrison Bailey, and Hendon Hooker, and you don't know Caden Salter's status at that point, you still go and bring in a guy who could potentially be your fifth scholarship quarterback. That doesn't scream, I like my options from a coach. But the development's not quite there yet. I think that's going to be a process. I also think one of the issues with Tennessee's offense that we haven't fully seen exposed yet is the offensive line is not that good. At least I don't think it's that good. No tackles. They really didn't run the ball well. I think they ran for 200 against Tennessee Tech, but it was about 4 or 5 a carry, if that. That unit's going to play into that too, but we're also talking about a unit that's probably 5 throws away from us having a completely different conversation about what that unit is at this point.
And the offensive line looks drastically different, it would seem, without Cooper Mays at center from series to series or from game to game. Go ahead, Lucas.
Yeah, Mike, I know y'all got a chance to meet with defensive line coach Rodney Gardner earlier today, kind of talking about that unit's development. Actually been kind of a bright spot, right, through the first few weeks with this defense. I think this defense has surprised everybody a little bit to an extent. But given what Florida did to Alabama, the way they were able to keep the football, running the ball, they were so successful running the ball. Obviously, besides the quarterback position, is Tennessee's defensive line unit that's played well so far the most important position group on the field for the Vols in Gainesville Saturday?
You know, I thought they have played well. I haven't thought they've played exceptionally. They did well against Bowling Green, which played basically 5 freshmen. Did pretty well against Tennessee Tech. Didn't think they did great against Pitt, which has a lot of experienced offensive linemen. So it's an important unit, but anytime we're talking about Tennessee's defense, I still think the linebackers matter more just because that unit hasn't really been good for 2 seasons now. And finding answers there is so important. I think the back end has been the pleasant surprise. I think the defensive line still has a shot to be that down the road, but I'm not sure they're that right now. And I think we're going to learn whether it's a good unit or not against Florida on Saturday for sure.
Mike Wilson is here with us of the Knoxville News Sentinel talking Vols ahead of Florida. B. Hibbs tweets us, hey, Buck Rising, please stop subjecting us to Mike Wilson each week. I don't do it every week. I do it intermittently, but no, Mike's presence is always welcome around here.
We will not stop.
Mostly because he compliments me on my face when I see him in the Zoom. Makes me very happy.
That, I mean, that's why I do it. That's to keep getting more appearances here, is just to continue getting asked back by Lucas.
It's a heady place. 615-737-1045 if you have questions on the Vols. Scott has one for Mike Wilson on Josh Heupel. Go ahead, Scott.
Mike, he'll do anything to try to get me to talk about quarterbacks right after I said I wasn't talking about quarterbacks.
You're a liar.
For a long time.
You're a liar,
so,
Scott.
It's not going to happen, Buck. You thought you had me, but it's not going to happen. Mike, my question is, what I was going to call and talk to Buck about, and I just got I got tied up in this, covering Josh Heupel, compare him to the previous three, you know, with the egos, the cliche answers, the complete just, and then Dooley just being a doofus. Can you compare Heupel, covering him and interviewing him, asking him questions, the way he relates back to the media? Because this is me on the outside looking in as a fan. I try to listen to every conference, every press interview he does, because I really do enjoy the way he interacts with the media. And it's nice, win or lose right now and where we're at, it's really nice to hear just good common sense interviews, good questions, good answers. It just doesn't seem like he's trying to give you guys the run around. Now, I'm on the outside looking in, so you guys are in the room. What's it – compare covering him to the previous three, the doofus, the cliche, the ego. Tell me about that, please, if you don't mind.
Yeah, well, I was not here for the Derek Dooley era, so I can't speak to that. I'll let your
– to the doofus. Now,
doofus, yeah. Stand alone without any questioning.
Shower also, discipline. That's all you need to know.
Shower discipline.
Went on a rant about shower discipline. That's we'll okay. Leave it there.
I also only caught the final 3 months of the Butch Jones era. However, I was well aware of Butch Jones and his interesting viewpoints and commentary on thing. Also, for the record, my first day covering Tennessee was the day that he said that Shy Tuttle fell on a helmet.
It's my favorite thing about, but there's so many great things about Butch. There's so many reasons I miss him, but that was a particular kind of highlight.
Yeah, that was Monday morning of my first day on this job, and remarkably, I continued to work here instead of running away from my life. So that kind of said everything. I mean, cliches, silliness kind of defined that. Pleasant enough in my limited experiences with him. Jeremy Pruitt leaned a little bit prickly most of the time from start to finish. And it became increasingly more prickly as the years went on, which, you know, when things are going south the way they did at a lot of points, that tends to happen. And I think your assessment of Josh Heupel is pretty good. He's certainly a nice enough guy. He's cordial, friendly with the media. Doesn't really go out there and say anything too wild, too interesting, which when you're coming off a coach like Butch Jones and a coach like Jeremy Pruitt, it's a very happy middle ground. But yeah, I mean, you can tell it's not his favorite thing in the world to do. But it's obviously a huge part of this job, especially in a market like Tennessee with so many people covering it. But yeah, I found Heupel to be a pleasant person, both from the starting on Zooms to now. You know, he's polite and a friendly enough guy. And I think that's, he seems like a normal dude as a football coach, which is definitely a big change from the previous administration.
That's all it is. He's just a human. He's just a normal human.
And, yeah. And so few of them are, though. Like that. I mean, I cover one who's a bit of an insane person. Like Mike Vrabel is not a normal human being. Thank God, because he makes him interesting. But yeah, there's nothing well normal or well adjusted about your average football coach.
Not even a little bit. And I have that belief about pretty much every high major coach in basketball. Football, you'll see it in baseball at this level too. They're all OCD crazy people in some sense. And you kind of have to be. I mean, it's not a knock necessarily as much as just a reality that when you have so many things going on and you have to keep track of, you kind of have to have a little bit of crazy to you to want to do it.
if they're going to have a chance, Mike, and we'll let you get out of here on this, as much as I have enjoyed our time together, and we'll do it again to Hibs sometime soon in the future. With Florida, you know, I think there are the most interesting result of the weekend was Alabama-Florida. Even though Alabama ended up winning, the way that they were kind of exposed on the defensive side of the football, the way their offense really stalled out in over the course of certainly the second half and really the three quarters after they kind of came out gunning. I was shocked by the way that Dan Mullen was able to run roughshod over an Alabama defense. Now, Alabama's playing defense a little differently than they're accustomed to as well, but what did Florida show you that intrigues you about this particular matchup coming up against Tennessee, and what does Tennessee have to do to, you know, really just be competitive?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to draw off what Alabama did because the talent level is a lot different for what Tennessee has on both sides of the ball. So it's hard to draw comparisons there. I mean, I left Neyland Stadium right around halftime of that Florida Alabama game. So caught the second half and you're kind of like, oh my gosh, what is happening?
Right.
I don't know that Tennessee has the depth or the bodies to do anything similar to that. I do think what we've learned about Tennessee specifically is, and this is not a surprise, this was kind of understood going into the year, the margin for error is remarkably small. And the Pittsburgh game showed that loud and clear, that Tennessee can't afford to miss downfield throws. Tennessee can't afford to have turnovers, let alone lose the turnover battle 3-0 like they did in that game.
Yeah.
So to me, it's mostly about Tennessee. I mean, Tennessee just is not good enough to have self-inflicted problems and missed plays downfield, anything blowing on defense. I mean, it's just such a thin margin. So I don't know how much Tennessee can really draw off what Florida was able to do against or what Alabama and Florida did in terms of going into this game.
I lied. Lucas wants to ask you another question.
Yeah, Mike, real quick on the much anticipated return of Byron. You can leave at any time. The much anticipated return of Byron Young against Tennessee Tech on Saturday. Involved in 6 tackles. That was his stat line. Did we overstate his, you know, his impact on this defense just because he was the guy that wasn't there? Is that not fair after one game? What was your takeaway?
It's definitely not fair after one game. I mean, it's hard to judge a player off one game like that. Yeah, I mean, I think that's still someone who's going to make a good impact on this. I think he and Tyler Barron are the best two pass rushers this team has. And that's saying that about Byron Young is largely going off what we've been told.
Right.
To be fair, but that's commentary from both coaches and teammates. And generally when you get that depth of similar viewpoints, there's probably something to it. So yeah, I think it's hard to draw conclusions about him. And obviously his first game at this level, even though it was against Tennessee Tech. So it was TBD on what impact he's going to have, but it seems like at some point or another, there's going to be something dominant from him based on everything we've been told. And maybe something that we'll see moving forward.
It's just such a bad missed opportunity by you to just not just leave the Zoom as soon as you finished asking the question. Like you whiffed on the comedy because yeah. You're trying to be diplomatic. You're trying to get invited back. And you're pandering. I hate that.
To be fair, Lucas is the one that texts me to come on. And so if I mean to Lucas, I might not get invited back. Then I can't talk to you. Then I can't bother Hibs. And it's just like I'm stuck out here in the wind.
He's a politically savvy man, Mike Wilson.
Just Game of Thrones behind the scenes. He is the one pulling all the puppet strings. Mike Wilson at By Mike Wilson. Go check out the Knoxville News Sentinel for all of their great sports coverage, where you can find Mike's work. You can find our buddy Adam Sparks. So many other great articles and content being produced there as well. See you, buddy.
I miss your face already, Buck. Bye, Lucas.
You know, it's a hard one not to miss, but apparently not my laugh, according to Stacy from the Founders Men Club earlier in the show. All right, let's grab a phone call, and then we'll wrap this thing up and do the polls. Let's go to David, who's been waiting patiently in Nashville to weigh in. What's up, David?
Hey, Buck. First-time caller for your show. I'm an old guy. I'm 67. I used to call a lot way back in the days, but this one, like 2 days in a row, I called the station.
Love it.
I just read an article by Bill Barnwell where he goes through some of the wins and losses, and it really aggravated me. He suggested Vrabel made a bad call by not going for two.
Yeah.
And instead kicking the extra point and going and playing in overtime. we had dominated them and worn them out. I think it was the exact right call.
You know,
even though we got won the toss and wasn't able to do anything with it.
Yeah, I'm looking at the article now, and I appreciate the call, David. Thank you. 615-737-1045. You know, myself, Steve Lehman, Karski, we were all sitting next to each other in the press box in Seattle, and Steve brought that up. We were kind of debating it amongst ourselves as to whether Vrabel would pull a London against the Chargers, right? Because that was a different situation. You're playing for overtime in Seattle rather than trying to prolong your stay in London. Because remember, they flew out immediately after that game, and they were trying to get the hell out of there in regulation against the Chargers. Now they whiffed on the 2-point, and it's something that Mike talked about. That he considered, and basically the response was he trusted his defense. Now, this is, and I respect Bill Barnwell's work a lot. I really think Bill's one of the smartest people that we have covering football. But what Bill, where you create the kind of division between people who look at the game like Bill does and consumers of football like David is, there's a statistical advantage to going for it and ending the game there, given how effective your offense had been against the defense. You're playing the probabilities at that point. Now, it doesn't mean that it's a perfect solution. You could have gone for it and botched it, and it could have cost you the game. And that would have felt a hell of a lot worse than if you'd played for overtime and lost in overtime, because at least you gave yourself that opportunity. But Barnwell looks at this from such a analytically driven standpoint, and it's difficult when you're kind of trying to parse the difference between, for example, a place like Football Outsiders, where you're citing EPA and DVOA and all of the things that are provided to in this new world of football analysis. There's more information out there for you to further your knowledge about the game, but it does not all need to be taken as gospel. And I think sometimes we tread water between that space where you're looking so closely at the numbers and you're so focused on the numbers that you would immediately rule it a bad decision. Now, Bill, this is what Bill does, right? His job, his role at ESPN, is to determine which were the best decisions, basically, based on what the numbers are telling him. And that's the genesis for the article. But what ended up playing in the favor of the Titans is that they did trust their defense, and the defense did play well after giving up those three passing plays for two touchdowns and 182 yards, because that happened too. All right, wrap up the show next. Polls on the other side. Tell them Blaine Bishop sent you. You can hear Blaine and Mickey coming up next till 3 o'clock. Until then, you're stuck with me. Stuck with me, stuck with my laugh. We'll get to polls here in just a second. Fun show today. Go check it out in your favorite podcast app. If you missed any of our interviews, we very much enjoy and appreciate our guests, Luke Worsham from A to Z Sports, Mount Juliet quarterback Steven Swanner, and Mike Wilson, who is always a delight, despite what Hibbs has to say.
An 8-3 today from Spencer.
Ooh, spicy. For what? What did we do? What did we do so well today?
Putting respect on Matt Corral and Ole Miss's name. I don't know if Spencer's an Ole Miss fan. But well, we did put some respect on Ole Miss's name today.
It would be indicated by the hottie toddy that immediately follows the sentence
okay.
You just read.
Okay, so a biased rating, but a rating nonetheless.
Indeed. So quick reminder, the 615 Sessions podcast, it'll be in your podcast feeds this afternoon. Not too late to send me Titans questions to my DMs on Instagram at Buck Rising, R-E-I-S-I-N-G, and we'll answer them there. On the pod, you'll enjoy that conversation. Then, of course, the install with Greg Cosell will be tomorrow, and we will break down the Titans and the Seahawks at great length and look forward to the Colts as well as the biggest games from the NFL weekend. I'm sure we'll spend some time on that Chiefs-Ravens result, because that was wild. Polls.
Oh, Nelly, this is Keith Jackson talking about college football. It's time to stop the count. The polls have closed, and the granddaddy of them all has been tallied. With your poll update, Poor Nelly, talking about Buck Rising show producer and daily correspondent, Lucas Panzeca.
Now, that's Rhett Bryant's best Keith Jackson impersonation.
Yeah.
Gus Johnson on the Arizona-Minnesota game was so good. I need more Gus-gasms on Kyler Murray plays, because he was great. The energy matched what we were watching. Go ahead.
What did you learn about the Vols against Tennessee Tech? Ryan Callahan of GoVols247 said they're better than Tennessee Tech. Hashtag analysis.
Look at that. That's why you go to 247 Sports and read Ryan Callahan.
Give them your money today. Puka says nothing. Farsender says Colby Morgan from Oneida sure can punt with a quote of Colby Morgan, an Oneida high school punter signing with Tennessee. Congratulations, Colby.
Very cool.
Jordan says, not a lot besides the O-line still being bad. They did have issues running the ball up the middle against Tennessee Tech, which would be a concern.
Cooper Mays.
And they were without Jabari Small, but, yeah, certainly Cooper Mays is a huge part of that. Jimmy says nothing. Henry says still can't throw the ball.
Yeah, that's not ideal. I mean, listen, it was a cleaner operation with Hooker than it was with Milton. But, again, you're going for Pittsburgh. Whose defense has played pretty badly.
Honestly, they lost to Western Michigan. That's not a good look.
No, and that's not because of Kenny Pickett. Like, he was out there trying to keep him in it, and that defense has been pretty unimpressive. So, you know, you're great on that curve. But I would say to you that I'm leaning more with Mike's direction when he's saying, Mike Wilson, when he's saying that you'll probably see some kind of platoon situation for the Vols at quarterback, because they both have things that will make them assets. And I honestly think you're better off taking Joe Milton out in spurts because he seems to get in his own head. Like, I think ask him to do a little less. You can do that given that the quarterback play right now is replacement level.
Who are the winners of the football weekend? Puka says USC because their plane had good sense, fell apart on the ground.
Oh, my God. Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw people making it. So where did they
were at who this weekend?
Oh, gosh.
Because I didn't see the game.
Yeah, and it was their first game without Clay Helton.
Right. So regardless, they had to fly from California to wherever it is that they were playing.
Yeah, they beat Washington State 45-14.
Oh, JG.
I don't even think JG played.
Oh no.
No, he did not. He did not play a snap.
So anyway, they also traveled to Washington State as I did this weekend, and their plane landed, but it landed. When it got to the gate, it like tipped backwards. Like the nose of the plane was off the ground. I saw people like Mike Golic Jr. making jokes about this is why you don't seat the offensive lineman in the back.
Right.
Why you put him in first class, all this stuff. But that's like, I mean, at least they got on the ground. That's scary.
Tip back on the tarmac. There's a Lane Kiffin joke in there somewhere. Vincenzo, our guy V says, who are the losers of the football weekend? My bad. I just moved right on. Darrington. Talked bleep all offseason, even called from the hospital to talk about Tannehill being Matt Schaub. The coward is nowhere to be heard after Sunday. And we did hear from Darrington today.
Yeah, and I think I agree with RJ and Phoenix. I think Darrington lied to us, and I don't appreciate being lied to.
I didn't see this. Farsender says the Philly special fail. A video from apparently the Eagles tried the Philly special in the post-Doug Peterson era. It did not work.
Nick Sirianni's out there pandering to Eagles fans, and they're just like, no, you idiot, run the offense.
Kenneth says, poor Zach Wilson. He threw 4 interceptions in his welcome to the NFL moment against the Patriots on Sunday.
Ooh, buddy, that was bad for the Jets. 4 interceptions, and I saw that Robert Saleh was talking about, you know, he's going to grow from this, he's going to learn from this, and that's all well and good. But, like, Jets, it's not his fault, though. Like, he's getting buried back there. And I know Mekhi Becton went out for the Jets, and they have some shuffling parts on the offensive line. This is what I fear for all these young, talented quarterbacks. All 5 of these dudes can play, but Trevor Lawrence is getting lit up in Jacksonville. Justin Fields got popped a couple of times when he went in for Andy Dalton, who has a bone bruise, by the way, so I'm sure you'll see more of Justin Fields.
Yeah, Tyrod Taylor, by the way, officially out Thursday.
That is something that is and who's their opponent?
The Panthers.
Okay.
The Davis Mills Show.
Panthers about to be 3-0.
What is the biggest surprise of the college football season over the first few weeks on the way out? Puka says Ohio State getting beat. Mahogany says Clemson being bad, still being in the top 10. Jordan says Clemson's offense is bad. Tim says Oregon beating Ohio State.
It's the fact that Alabama looks just a little bit human, if only for a minute. Talk to you tomorrow. Blaine and Mickey, they're next.